I'm excited about being able to share with you on this day of Purim. Purim is the festival that celebrates the deliverance of the children of Israel by the hand of Adonai through Esther and Mordecai. And there was a plot, all these things are happening, and it looked pretty dire to them. The king of the world at that time, their world anyway, had given permission to an evil person to carry out his edict of wiping out all the Jews on the 13th day of Adar. But God, right? But God, there was a divine reversal. There was a divine reversal. And instead of them being wiped out and killed, they were able to, through legal terms, in legal ways, able to defend themselves and win the battle and dispose of their enemies. It's written in the book of Esther, in chapter 8, verse 8 and 11. And it says, "Now write in the king's name, on behalf of the Jews, what seems good to you, and seal it with the king's signet ring. For a decree that is written in the king's name and sealed with the king's ring cannot be revoked." Verse 11, "The king granted the right for the Jews in every city to assemble themselves and to protect themselves, to destroy, kill, and annihilate any army of any people or province that might attack them and their women and their children, and to plunder their possessions." Esther chapter 8, verse 11. The word Purim means in Persian means lot. It's the plural for lot, a lot. It was a form of casting the lot in that place at that time. And this is the biblical holiday that celebrates how the Jewish people were saved from annihilation in ancient Persia, as told in the biblical book of Esther. On Thursday night, we read that book here, and then you read it at home the next day. On Purim, the Jewish people celebrate the great reversal. It was a great reversal of fortune of the children of Israel in Persia, and how the day that was originally set for their destruction was transformed into a day of joy, great joy and celebration. According to the Hillel International website, okay, so if you go to Hillel International on the website, quote, "Purim celebrates the profound reversal of fortune, a profound reversal of fortune, the deliverance of the Jews of ancient Persia from persecution." We're praying for parts of Persia when we pray for Syria, and we pray for Iraq, and we pray for Iran. Rescued by heroic intervention from Queen Esther and her cousin Mordecai, the Jewish people were saved from the diabolical plot of the evil Haman. Boo. Haman is a descendant of Amalek, the ancient enemy of God. The story of Purim is laced with all too real themes. The real theme of concealing one's identity. This is very true in the Jewish world. You know, they, in order to avoid death and persecution, most conceal their identity, especially the Jews that came from Spain in 1492 and forward. Because there was an edict passed in Spain that you had to convert to Catholicism and you couldn't practice Judaism anymore. And many people gave lip service to that. Meaning, in order to save their lives, they said they would, but they continued to practice Judaism in their home and with their family. So they instituted a court of inquisition to find out who are the people doing that. And if they didn't repent according to what they wanted to, they were tortured to death. and their possessions taken by the state. How convenient. Especially if your population is the bankers, if your population is the money people, if your population is the ones that do law, if your population is the ones that have a significant portion of the economy, then how convenient it is to take their possessions, plunder them, kill them, and take their possessions. I'm from Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico was discovered in the second voyage of Christopher Columbus. It's a tiny little island, a speck of an island, only 100 miles wide and 100 miles long, 35 wide, a little rectangle, so to speak, of an island. It is not near anything else. It is surrounded by the deepest part of the Atlantic Ocean. So there's parts in the sea, the Caribbean Sea, that are the deepest parts of the Atlantic Ocean. Okay, so there's no way to get out of Puerto Rico. You get in there and you get dropped there. So the people were dropped there, and on the second voyage, on the first voyage, nobody wanted to go with Columbus. Come on now. Nobody wanted to go. So they had to go empty the jail. So who were the people in the jails? Well, according to the Inquisition, the majority of the people in the jails were the Jewish people. Columbus himself is thought to be Jewish, not from Genoa, Italy, okay? But actually a Jew that came in, if it were, he was concealed. He didn't go and say, well, here, I'm a Jew, etc. He just came and said, you know, I know that we can discover a new world. Let me go. But the thought at that time was that the earth was flat. And if you got over there somewhere, you'd fall off. Okay, so nobody was interested in going with Columbus. How convenient that what happens to be in the jails are the Jewish people. So he builds his three ships with Jewish people. And you can look at the history of the logs of the ship and who's keeping track and all these things and find out that indeed the ships are full of Jewish people. Not too many Spaniards. They weren't going. In fact, the crown assigned a couple of soldiers per boat. So on the first voyage, when they discovered the island of the Dominican Republic, which is called Hispaniola, which means Spaniard, Hispaniola. Okay? And then they returned on the second trip. They veered just a little bit and ended up in a place called Puerto Rico. They dropped there. People on the boat. Among them is going to be eventually a fellow named Juan Ponce de León. Juan Ponce de León is kind of famous in Florida because he stayed in Puerto Rico a little while and then came to Florida and discovered Florida. This is before the Mayflower. So the United States was discovered by Spaniards. And the first people that settled in the United States were Spaniards, Jewish Spaniards. If you look at the history of Florida, which is being revealed, and there's lots of things that say that, they talk about the fact that San Agustin, St. Augustine, was actually founded by Jewish people. Before there were Jews in New York, there were Jews in Florida. How about that? How about that? If you look at the movie that was just made, that's like four in four parts. And my elder Sam back there sent it to me on the day that it was, that they became public. He sent it to me. And I sat there glued to the screen watching the history of the Jewish people in Florida. Among that, it goes to the fact that a bunch of Native American tribes, which are called the Seminoles, among the Seminoles, they sing songs that are Hebrew, and they make the noises as Hebrew. They sing the Shema, and they sing all these other things. Okay, it sounds like a foreign language to everybody else, but it's God's language. And so there was it among the Native Americans, there was people who were sympathetic, if nothing else. Okay, you can look at the statement and the proof. They were more than sympathetic. In other words, Florida is really a Jewish colony. Precedes the founding of America, precedes the Mayflower, precedes the thing that happened in Virginia and New York. It precedes that by almost 100 years. Of course, Florida was not part of the colonies, was it? It was called the Territory of Florida, La Florida, which means flowery. La Florida was not part of the 13 colonies. Okay? Georgia was, but not Florida. And my wife always likes, she was born in Georgia, but she adopted Florida as her home. And she can be reminded she was born in Jessup, Georgia, but she'd rather be reminded that she lives in Gainesville, Florida. And this is what she likes to be. So all these things I'm sharing with you so that you get an idea of reversals. Reversals. You know, those people that were left in Puerto Rico, as soon as the Spaniards left, the Jews decided to move to the most remote mountains in Puerto Rico. Now, they're not mountains like, you know, Colorado. But for a tiny little island, they're huge mountains. When I was little, to go visit my grandparents, you had to drive on a Spaniard road that had 333 curves. How do you know? I counted them. I counted them all the time. Today, they built a highway, an American highway, that goes from the city, the nearest big city, to there in 15 minutes. It took a long more than that when I was a little fellow. There was nothing to do for 3 hours except count the, you know, so I counted. Like counting sheep, I counted the curves. Okay? And you went in that place, and so by car, it would take two and a half, three hours to go back to civilization. Why did they do that? Well, these people did that because they would be isolated from the Spanish Inquisition. They would be isolated from the Spanish Inquisition, and they could raise their family and be left alone. Nevertheless, these people that came from Spain in that area, Puerto Rico, there's two little areas, all related. My family, both my mother and father, are from there. In those small related areas, they were just very country. Totally country. They raised their own coffee. As a matter of fact, the town called Lares raises coffee that for a long time was consumed by the Vatican. And only what was left was allowed to be sold. He almost never got it because that was the greatest coffee to serve the Pope. Okay? Now you can find this called Alto Grande there. But these families were very characteristic of them. They were my father's family, which is the one I remember the most of, were very independent. So much so that in the 1800s, a cry of independence came out of there for the whole island. And it's still celebrated today as the cry of independence from Spain. What was the cry of independence from Spain? Well, when I was in school, they said it was political. But my uncle that I'm named after, my father had like 13 brothers and sisters. So the youngest one was named Antonio, and I was named after him. He became the school principal of the city, and he was the school principal for over 30-some years. We went to visit in 1994, and he gave us a tour of the city. Everywhere I went, he said, "That's you're related to him." So they say, "Welcome, family." And so I went and had the greatest ice cream and things like that, all served by distant family. Okay, and then when we're standing in front of the main part of the city, he says, "Do you know who that is?" And I said, "Yes, that's Albizu Campos, the person who was in, you know, ordered that revolution, that was credited to being over that revolution." He said he had like a cabinet. I said, "Yes." Two of the four cabinet members were Jews. This is my uncle, who's not claiming anything. He just sharing information with me. I said, "Oh, that's interesting." He said, "Yes. The secretary and the treasurer were Jewish. So the money was Jewish money." And the writing of all this was done by someone who was very educated. The revolution didn't last very long because the government of Spain was able to squash it in less than a month. They ordered all those people to be hanging the gallows. But the new governor kind of telling Spain, "Let me do it my way," decided to give them amnesty in order to allow the country, this little place, nowhere place, in the middle of the Caribbean Sea, to allow it to become peaceful again. Never been forgotten, and you can go look at El Grito de Lares. Lares was the birthplace of my mother and my father. I didn't know any of this. When I came to the United States, at 16 years old, I had no idea. When I got saved because Marilyn led me to the Lord in 1978, I had no idea. But I got saved into a messianic kind of movement, like organization, that we would call it today Jewish Roots, but it wasn't called that in 1977. It was just called the Church of God Teaching New Testament Judaism. Okay, and in that group of people, they kept the Shabbat and they kept the holidays. At no point did anybody say anything about, I never heard in Ocala, which is where this was, never heard them say, "We're Jewish." Instead, they said, "We have been grafted in, and because we've been grafted in, we want to do the things that are Jewish because that's part of our history, that's part of our who we are. But we are the Gentile part of this movement." Okay? And they kind of dared call it a movement. At the time, I kind of laughed and said, "A movement." Well, I stayed there for 14 years, traveling to Central America and Mexico and starting congregations all around those areas. And as the more that Marilyn and I got into this idea of Jewish roots, the more we found that that was speaking to us. We desire to be more and more into that. Discovered that there was such thing as a messianic movement and attempted in 1989 to leave the church and join it. And we asked the Lord about that and prayed about that, and he was silent. Now, I could tell you as to the why of that, because it had to do with, for example, I was one of the people that helped the government of Mexico pass a law that allowed every denomination, all the Protestants, to have own land, have a bank account, and be recognized by the state. Up to that point, only Catholics. So I was over a group of thousands of Mexicans that were into this idea of Judaismo Messianico. Okay? And had a difficult time. I took money to the bank thinking that I could do that in 15 minutes. After a week, the answer was no. Which meant that I had to then leave that national money in the hands of somebody and continue to deal with the problem of getting back every 3 months and trying to find out where the money is, or who got the money, or who took the money, or whatever. And so for denominations other than Catholic, they couldn't have a bank account. So there was no way that this could be continue. So working with a government person, I, representing the Church of God and all the thousands that were, we worked together, and in 1993, they passed a law in Mexico allowing all these people to become legit entities, legit churches, legit, in order to, that was signify then the end of my tenure, because the next thing to do was to now name a national bishop who would become the Bishop of Mexico over all these places. Up to that point, I had been the bishop. When that passed, then on the installation of this bishop, I had the privilege to go to Veracruz, Mexico, and conduct the first wedding, Jewish wedding, for this man to marry, who became the leader of that congregation. But as 93 was coming to an end, a friend of ours had found the Messianic movement in Tampa, invited us to come, and invited the rabbi of that congregation to come, and we had spent a weekend together. On Sunday afternoon, as we were standing by his feet, washing his feet, actually really crying, like almost like the woman crying and washing Yeshua's feet with our tears, the man started prophesying to us. His name is Rabbi Chaim Levy. And he welcomed us to the Messianic movement and then said, "You're Jewish. Your names are in my book." At that point, there was no internet to speak of. So he had gotten a book, written a book of all the Jewish names of the people from Spain that had been sent to the New World. So the name Arroyo, Rios, Torres, Colón, the last names of my mother and father, were in the book. So he showed me. Then he said, "You're Jewish." Which was like, what? That began a story that I'm not going to tell today. But I want to tell you something. Next week, I'm going to Dallas. And there's going to be a national conference. And all we call Anusim, okay, the forced ones that were forced, you know, in that. instead of some other names that have been assigned to us, like marranos, which means pigs. We're meeting there to discuss how can the Union of Messianic Jewish Congregations in the United States, what's the process, and what are going to be the requirements to allow the Anusim community to become part of the mainstream Jewish community in the United States. I'm going to do that next week. So I will not be here. John will take over the service. You know, if we're flying American Airlines, which is not exactly funny right now, like, don't even bring it up. But we're flying American Airlines because it has a direct flight from Gainesville to DFW. We'll be there next week for 3 days, sequestered at Baruch Hashem Messianic Synagogue, one of the largest synagogues in the United States, the Messianic Jews in Dallas. We'll be sequestered with people from all around the United States, people from Brazil, and other Anusim like myself will be there to discuss this. In this case, there's some other Anusim like myself that are congregational leaders in San Antonio and other places. And there's a congregational leader, which is also a regional director in Brazil that we visited last year. He will be there as well. And this discussion hopefully opens the door for the welcoming of the Anusim into mainstream. So it's a rather important meeting. I think for this reason I have been here. With us is Daniel's wife, and their family's from Cuba. And their families also has the same kind of thing. They're in Cuba, they practice Messianic Judaism, kind of hidden. They have to stay hidden from the Cuban government that is repressive. But they have gone, her mom and dad have gone, especially her mom, who plays the guitar and sings and beautifully, and has raised this wonderful family together. And they go back and forth because there are a lot of congregations there. I think that you guys know about that. Ellos lo que están aquí. They know about it. Why do they come here? They come here because something in their heart is stirred up. In the same way that for the majority of people here, something in your heart stirred you up to get close to the Jewish people, to get close to the Jewish scripture, to be able to participate, maybe even join it. Huh? So, continuing the story of Purim and our lives, and of our lives, can be read in two ways. We can either choose how to interpret the story. We can choose how to interpret the story. But as you look at what happened in the book of Purim, it seems to me that there's a conglomeration of happenstances. Just so happened that this. Just so happened that. Just so happened this other thing. Just so happened this other thing. And we can just go ahead and think that the just so happens is just random. And we all talk about it all the time. It just, don't you think it's random? This just happened. That seems like, that's really strange. We don't stop to think that Adonai functions in every facet of our lives. He does. In January 15 of 2022, I preached a message among many over the years entitled Maftir to Maftir. And I elucidated that Amalek, which is a real person and a real number of people, but as a designation, Amalek is contains about all the false things it contains, it has the false notion that everything that happens in our lives is happenstance. It's all random. Like there's nobody in charge, and it just so happened that, well, it just so happened that my mom and dad were both born in Lares, but didn't meet in Lares. They met in San Juan during the war. Really? The article, Purim in the 21st Century, in Chabad.org, states the following, and I'm going to read that. Purim is a story of happenstance. I didn't say that. They did. It just happened that Vashti refused to listen to her drunken husband's wishes. It just so happened that Esther was chosen as the new queen. It just so happened that Mordecai saved the life of the king. It just happened that Haman was plotting to annihilate the Jews while Esther was queen. It just happened that Esther made a good party and beseeched the king to save the Jews. It just happened, happenstance, that Haman hung in the gallows that he made to hang the Jews. And his 10 sons later on also get hung there, even after they were killed. The gallows that were prepared for Mordecai by Haman at the great idea of his wife, Zeresh, was actually where he and his sons hung. All of this is random, isn't it? The second thing that it says, Purim is Adonai's story. The Jews had drifted away from their core, and Adonai chose to bring them back to themselves and to him. So he used Haman as a tool. What do you mean? He used an evil person as his tool? Oh, yes, he did. Oh, yes, he did. For those of you that don't like Trump, I mean, he used donkeys to do what he wanted to do. Do you want to go ahead and call Trump a donkey, or the most common name? Okay? Hello? The Lord can use whomever he wants, and he already has a history using donkeys. Or you like the other name. He used Haman as a tool. He planned the salvation before the crisis. Esther was chosen as queen so that when the Jews repented, they immediately be saved and witness a complete reversal of their situation. They would witness a complete reversal of the situation. John, if you can find, there's a CD that is from The Road to Jerusalem, and the first, if you do find it, let me know and we'll play that quote from the Book of Esther, as done by Joseph Marcelino, who we met, and who was the person who made this happen. Until he finds it, I'm going to continue. In chapter 6, here we go. Is that it? No, it's the first track. The very first track is spoken by Joseph Marcelino.
If you remain completely silent at this time, relief and deliverance will arise for the Jewish people from another place. but you and your father's house will perish. Yet who knows whether you have come to the kingdom for such a time as this?
Indeed, she came to the kingdom for such a time as this. It was all happenstance. It was all random. Except that we know better. Except that we know better. We know that the Lord of heaven and earth is orchestrating everything around us. You are not randomly here. I didn't randomly show up in 1993 in Tampa to be welcomed to the Messianic movement, who didn't really want to welcome me, by the way. No such thing as a Hispanic Jew. People go, where are you from? Puerto Rico. Oh, they don't have any Jews there. It's all Catholic. Well, that's what I was raised to believe. Only to find out different. Let me tell you, none of you are here by happenstance. And actually, the Lord's continuing that story, keeps repeating over and over and over again. So just get around Elisma a little while, and you find out that South Africans have this happening to them too. Or get around Pat for a little while and find out that she is really Jewish. Well, get around Daniel and his family. They come from South Florida, from Miami, but they're not Cubans. And find out how Jewish they are. And his wife, find out how Jewish she is. All happenstance, right? Actually, Lee, not random that you're here. You believe it yourself. You told me yourself. Sam? Sorry, man. Continuing with the message, in chapter 6 of our 2021 book entitled Declarations for Breakthrough, I quoted from this in the message that I preached at the MJAA's conference last time I preached there, probably the last time I'll ever preach there. I thought it was the best message I've ever done in my life. And I quoted some of this book, but not what I'm quoting today, a different part. Her name is Jane Hammond, and her husband Tom are the senior leaders of Vision Church in Santa Rosa, Florida. That is really close to Pensacola. In other words, another Floridian, a fellow Floridian. She elucidates in her book on what she called divine reversals. Divine reversals. What do you mean? She states, among other things, the Lord said he was causing divine reversals in physical conditions of deterioration and turning them around. Speaking about just from nowhere, healings coming. In Jewish literature, Purim is called the holiday that celebrates a divine reversal. In Judaism, Purim is called the holiday that celebrates a divine reversal. She's got my attention, don't you think? She has yours a little bit, maybe? Jane said she was studying the book of Esther when she first heard from the Lord about the biblical concept of divine reversals. We find reversal in the Torah. But Adonai, your God, refused to listen to Balaam. The same place that has the donkey and stuff. And Adonai, your God, turned, Vayahafoch, the curse into a blessing for you because he loves you. Everything was set up for Balaam to go and curse Israel. And on the way to do this, some animal decides to speak to him, guided by the Spirit, yes, and refuses to go. But because donkeys are known to be a little, have their own mind, he started to beat him with a rod and continued beating his donkey until finally the donkey turned around and said, "Why are you beating me?" I mean, imagine that. Now, I never beat the dogs in my house or the horses or any of those things. But had they talked to me, I would have just come out of my skin. I'd probably just run into the house and get Marilyn. Go talk to your dog. Go talk to your horse. I don't think they want to talk to me. I'm not the one that feeds them and loves on them and all those things. In the Dabka writer, the dictionary translates the Hebrew word rendered churned in the TLV. Rather than I turn the blessing, the cursing into blessing. Okay? Actually means he will reverse the future. What? He will reverse the future. Change the current and there'll be a reversal in the future. Jane continues, in the book of Esther, it is used in the sense of reversing a decree of death and destruction and releasing a new decree of authority, life and peace, celebration, etc. Which is, towards the end of the book, we see that what was supposed to be the day of dying becomes now a day of celebration that we still celebrate today. Celebrating Adonai's hand that allows us to have life and life more abundant. She gives some steps of action in chapter 6 of her book. So let me read a little bit of that. Number one, take up the call to intercede. Take up the call to intercede. Number two, spend your favor. Based on that alone, I preached a message here in 2022 about spending Adonai's favor. Because I've been talking for more than 2 years about the favor of Adonai is the greatest thing we can have in the congregation. But it's not to hoard it. That it's not the economy of God. It's not for him to give you something that you can put it in the bank. He didn't give you money for you to put it in the bank. He gave you money for you to use it for his purposes. What if you use it all? Well, he owns a bank of 1,000, He's got plenty of money. I mean, actually, his money's really good. It's not paper. Okay? Which means nothing. Number three, write a new decree in the irrevocable authority of Yeshua. Number four, fight back. Fight back. Number five, receive a divine reversal. Receive a divine reversal. And number six, release sounds of joy. What? Sound of joy. What? Release sounds of joy. What? The lady doesn't know what she's talking about. But that means release called Simcha. That's what that means. That's our name, sound of joy. Release called Simcha. I came here to tell you we need to be released. We need to move forward in the Lord and do all kinds of great things that he has in store for us. But it doesn't look really good. Well, we are in the season of reversals, and reversals are coming. She concludes by making the following decree, and I quote, if you want to say it with me, you can say it with me. This is my time. This is my time of divine reversal. Whatever the enemy has meant against me for evil is being turned for good. Is that biblical? That's exactly what Joseph said. Happened with his brothers. That's in Genesis chapter 50, verse 20. What you meant for evil, Adonai has turned for good so that the nation could be saved. Not just good for him, so that the nation could be saved. Whatever schemes the enemy has formed in secret will be uncovered and they will boomerang back. So that's the idea of the reversal, is that, that like the Aussies, they send this thing called the boomerang. It goes over there, and it comes back to where it came from. I wonder why they use that. It's a tool to kill animals. If you miss, it comes back to you. If you hit the target, then you can go get it and get the target too for food. I will spend my favor and expect to see open doors of opportunity so that I can advance the kingdom of Adonai and advance my destiny. I will write new decrees and join them with my prayers of intercession to see breakthrough happen. Adonai will turn my mourning into dancing. Psalm 30. Thou hast turned my mourning into dancing for me. Okay. My sorrow into joy. My sickness into health. My lack of abundance and doubt into faith. Adonai is indeed going to turn things around for me. Do you believe it? You claim it? This year we celebrated Purim on the evening on Thursday, March 13, 2025. That is, on the eve of the 14th day of the 12th month in the Hebrew calendar, just like what the book says. So we're kind of known around here to do whatever the thing says, then that's when we do it. It's not convenient to do it on a Thursday night. It's not convenient to do it on a Monday night. It's super inconvenient if it were Sunday night. It'd be most convenient if it was Friday night, because we have the place. It's ours. And it could be convenient Saturday night because we're here until nighttime. You know, as long as we clean the place after we use it, then we can stay here. But it's not super convenient. So what I find along the entire United States is that since everybody's renting, like in Israel, they don't own the place they rent. So they really cannot just go and tell the landlord, I've got a high holiday coming on Wednesday night. Because the landlord said, well, you don't have Wednesday night. And that's somebody else had that night. So when we came here this last time in this place, we made two requests. One is to have the ark, the Torah ark, stay on the stage. I said, if you cannot have our Torah ark stay on the stage, then this discussion is over. And John was there, so. And the second thing we said is, we want to rent the place Friday night, Saturday night, but you've got to allow us to be able to celebrate the high holy days here. We'll give you a calendar at least 2 years in advance showing that a particular night that is not convenient for anybody, including us, that we may need to use a facility or a daytime. And we still are able to do that. With some pushback and some whatever, but we're still able to do that. Did you know that Thursday night was a blood moon? Around 2:30 a.m. And the next one is next year at Purim. So the first one is this year at Purim, and the next blood moon is the next year in Purim. Oh, did you know that President Trump was born on a blood moon? Oh, of course, it's all happenstance. It's random. Then what does this have to do with the price of eggs? Well, in his first return, the one that wasn't supposed to happen, on the divine reversal that took place when the country voted in November, and what was expected to be a landslide win for the other side, became a landslide wind to whose magnitude we had no idea. And not only did he win the House, but he won the Senate, the House. He got more than the minimum number of seats for the Electoral College because he took all the swing states. Unexpected. And he won the popular vote. Unexpected. With all of California, all of New York, all of these other places all going, no, 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 no. The voice of the people spoke. And so that's what we're actually witnessing since January. We're witnessing that the Lord is allowing this. You want to call him a donkey, you go ahead and call him all you want to. Actually, the prophetic world has a different name for him. They call him Cyrus. He has something to do with Persia. Okay, I don't have time to tell you about it, but Cyrus is one of the kings of Persia. It came after Nebuchadnezzar and Belshazzar. Okay, and the third one is Cyrus, and the fourth one is Darius. And Cyrus and Darius actually esteemed him. So much so that you read in the book of Daniel that the king Darius, who felt that they tricked him into doing this, they tricked him so that he would have to execute the law of his own land. They tricked him. And he was upset. And he didn't want to put Daniel in the lion's den. But he did it. And he kind of had faith, huh? He seemed to this king has faith enough to stand around the outside and pace the door. And as soon as the time was up, who is the one that yells into the lion's den, Daniel, Daniel, are you there? Then from that point on, I want to tell you something. You can be duped once, but you ain't going to be duped again. So Trump was duped in his first term by lots of people. He's not acting like he's ready to be duped again. And Darius kept Daniel in his side, in his kingdom. And he was able to live the rest of his life in peace, serving the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, but also serving the king of Persia. How interesting is that? You might say that, so who sent the reconstruction of Jerusalem? Who sent Nehemiah? What king was Nehemiah being the cupbearer for that sends him to rebuild the city of Jerusalem, the walls, and gives him the money and so on and to do it? Along with Ezra, we know they did do it, right? Along with Ezra, we see that the temple was rebuilt. And along with Ezra, we see that the city's walls was rebuilt. And along with Ezra, the second temple gets dedicated. On what day? Random. Another random day. On the very same day that the first temple was dedicated. It's all random, man. In fact, the first temple was destroyed on Tisha B'Av. The second temple was destroyed on Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av, the ninth of Av. Random. Crystal night. Right? The crystal night thing that happened Crystal knock, whatever. I just kind of butcher everything. On that same night! What? Do you think there's a message that the enemy's trying to send? Or do you think that there's messages that God wants to send? The heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament declares his wisdom. So the firmament is talking on Thursday night and sends this blood moon on Trump's first return back to power. I'm just going to, just so that you get it right, the next one is also, the next Purim is. You know that that in the fall of 2025 is the only other blood moon. Did you know that when the next election happens, it's in 2028, it happens to be a Shemitah year, a Shemitah year. All that's random. All that's random. I want you to know that there's nothing random going on right now. I want you to know that the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob is speaking. In fact, he's screaming. He's using the firmament and everything to say, and we can just go on and on and on. We can just get the row and go, row, row, row your boat gently down the stream. Merrily, 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 life is but a dream. Or we can wake up and smell the coffee, as they say, and look around what's being said and see that Adonai is speaking. See that stuff is happening. We're in the midst of stuff that's happening. The prophets say that the time between Purim this year and the blood moon and Passover is sacred time this year. Passover is the next full moon. Purim was the full moon of March. Passover is the full moon of April. Coincidence. Or design, maybe. Maybe it's the design. So what are we going to do? I mean, I'm really tired. What does that have to do with me? I think it has a lot to do with us. If we just listen, if we open our ears, if we open our eyes, if we sense that the Lord is fixing to do something, if you sense that the Lord is fixing to do divine reversals, do you think it's just for me? I'm the only person going to be wanting a divine reversal, or do you have situations in your life that you need a reversal? Do you need divine intervention in your life? Come on now. Whatever it is, you want to conceive, whatever it is you want to do, you can't do it. Look, if there was a way to do it, we go do it. But we can't do it. And we're being told you can't do it. And you're not going to do it. The enemy's got this thing on us. And we're just going around like this. Well, I got new knees, man. I'm going to stand up and say, no, no, no. No! What other spelling do you want? Law or no? Both sound but similar. In the Jewish website we read, the Jewish Unpack website, it says, Purim is an extremely festive and joyous occasion that is celebrated with the community. A few of the ways Purim is typically celebrated include, this is a Jewish website, okay? Reading the Megillah, the scroll, the book of Esther. Reading the Megillah, the scroll of Esther, at night. Check. Check. We did that. Making noise with groggers, noise makers. And when Haman is mentioned, when we read the Megillah, we go, boo! Check. Dressing up in costumes. You missed it. Okay, you missed it. The Barnum and Bailey family was here. Okay, you missed it. You miss Juan Valdez. He shows up every year. Check. Having a festive holiday meal. Well, look, the way I feel about life is I have a festive meal every chance I get. And certainly on the days that are high holidays, etc., we have special stuff. So what did we have yesterday? Poppycock. You don't know what it is. Look it up. We had so much of it that my tummy was making noises. Orville Redenbacher makes it now. And it was BOGO at Publix last week. So I got enough for a Purim and after that too. Merrymaking. Okay, if you came here Thursday night, everybody came with their... Make me laugh if you can. Actually, we didn't have to make you. All you had to do was look at Sam dressed the way he was. Or you can look at John, who for the first time, there was a divine reversal. And John was not Haman this year. He was Mordecai. Come on, listen. You just can't make this stuff up like somebody else has said. I'm saying, so I didn't program that. I would have liked to have programmed that and give John a chance of being the nice guy instead of the boo guy. The guy. It happened. Divine reversal is already manifested in our congregation. And John Davis, he was the good guy. And Joe Simpkins is usually the good guy. He was Haman. We hung him at the gallows. And in fact, that young man back there, he was there, and he did the hanging. Praise the Lord. He had about 10 names. He was eunuch number this, and eunuch number that, and eunuch number this, and eunuch number that. We don't wish you to be a eunuch, but you were certainly mentioned a number of times. Eating three-cornered filled pastries called hamantaschen. Did we do that? Oh, yeah. Maryland didn't make them this year. A Jewish bakery made them in... No. They came from the great state of New Jersey, where they have a lot of Jews. And that's where Publix gets them. And we got to talk to them, and they said they would sell us multiple boxes. So we brought you perfectly made hamantaschen. They look really nice. Next, putting on a humorous play in costumes known as the Purim Spiel, which means play in Yiddish. Did we put on a play? Did somebody control that play? Actually, no. It was kind of... free-for-all, except it wasn't a free-for-all, was it? It was directed by what was being read. And the Lord turned Stephanie and Joe Simpkins, who were supposed to be on their way to Virginia, turned them around to come back so that she could participate and direct the play. Because after all, she has all these play people in her family. And I'm just sitting there eating it up to go along with this festive meal that I was going to eat later and all the poppycock. Giving gifts of pastries and other food to friends and neighbors. Well, I think that there were other pastries here and other food here. And I didn't know who was going to bring it. But Barbara brought kugel, which is a Jewish dish. And Jean brought the stuff he normally brings. Stuff he goes to get in a special bakery and all these things. So actually, there was stuff here to share and eat. Check. The last thing on here. Giving gifts of money, of food or drink to the poor. That was done because people in their offering gave that. We have offerings to make to the poor on behalf of the congregation. let me finish, get ready to end here. Did you know that Mordecai, come on, John needs to enjoy this first year. Mordecai, was the son of Jair. The English name for Jair is Jairus. Jairus. See my February 24, 2018 message entitled, Lord, I Believe, Help My Unbelief. Special person. Jairus, Jair, means son of light. Son of light. But not the light like this light, incandescent. The son of light that it emanates from a burning candle or a candlestick. Okay? Son of light. Oh, we are also son of lights. We're also part of the menorah, right? Maybe we forgot what I said last week or something. We're also part of the menorah, and we're a menorah congregation. We want to be. By faith, we're a menorah congregation. That means that each one of you has the opportunity to be one of those lights. You are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill, okay? Nobody takes a light and sticks it under the table and covers it with a bushel. But instead, he puts it on a candlestick, on a menorah, and puts it on top of the table so everyone can see it. Let your light, therefore, the Lord said, let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and rejoice and glorify the Father who is in heaven. Let your light so shine before men, Yeshua said. So what's he talking about? Talking about the disciples, he sent to the disciples, and therefore saying to us, you are like a light, a menorah light, and it needs to be put a candlestick. We have a candlestick congregation right here so that it can shine before men and it can rejoice and give glory to our Father in heaven. We are also sons of light because Yeshua said, I'm the light source. I'm the light of the world. Me, myself, and I. And then he said, you are the light of the world. So Yeshua is our enlightener. How about that? Esther. Right? Was raised for her role as a lady for such a time as this. That's why John found that. And we played it. And you heard Marcelino speaking, the guy who produced the CD. And so are our ladies here in Kol Simcha. A bunch of Esthers around here. There's a lot more Esthers here today than usually. That's because Daniel has at least five. So when Daniel comes, there's going to be more ladies than gentlemen because that's the lot that he got. And I tell you what, he had a big lot. So it's going out of business, big lots. So maybe it'll move to Daniel. Daniel is going to have big lots now. See my February 23, 2021 message entitled, The Ladies for Such a Time as This. The poor message about ladies. Did the Lord use a lady to do a divine reversal? He could have used anybody he wanted to. He could have used a donkey if he wanted to. And instead he used a beautiful lady. I think that the Lord wants to use ladies for all kinds of divine reversals. And you have been called to such a time as this yourself. This is our time, my friends. Our divine reversal is on its way. So today, I want to close with the story of Purim. I got this from Chabad.org. I'm not a good reader of poetry. PJ, are you a good reader of poetry? Come on and read this. Is it okay if I call her TJ? I should just say, Madam TJ. No, but that I'm not entitled to that. Well, that is black. Not yet. It'll be read in proper English.
A royal party, like you've never seen, but Vashti refuses to be the dancing queen. A drunken king orders her killed, leaving a position to be filled. A great beauty pageant begins, a nice Jewish girl wins. While the Jewish community quelled her religious identity, Esther withheld. Meanwhile, Mordecai is the talk of the town. To Haman the wicked, he won't bow down. Too bad Haman has a short fuse and decides to kill all of the Jews. Esther is asked to intercede with the king, but who knows what that could bring. What mood will be in when she arrives? This guy has no qualms about killing his wives. So the Jews fast and pray, and Esther prepares a royal buffet. Mordecai is hopeful and is not scared, as Haman is having his gallows prepared. A reversal of fortunes, a twist of fate, leaves Haman a bit irate. God's plan is put into gear. Haman's end is very near. Esther proves to be a queen of great spirit and grace, and Haman is hanged in Mordecai's place. The king turns over a new leaf. Mordecai's the new chief. The Jews are empowered to fight for their lives. Justice triumphs and Judaism survives. The 13th day of Adar comes and the Persian army succumbs. Gone was the threat of annihilation. Purim became a day of celebration. So grab a Megillah and read, and let the spirit of Adonai guide you therein.
Shabbat shalom. Please stand.